This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
7:36 in the morning, you're listening to The Morning Run with Shazana Xiaoning and Philip. But in the meantime, let's talk about the state of crypto. The collapse of the stablecoin Terra USD in May this year triggered a downward spiral for the crypto markets, which has seen at least three major names in the industry file for bankruptcy. We've got Voyager and Celsius Network, which are brokering platforms, as well as the hedge fund Three Arrows Capital.
Now, these collapses have brought Singapore into the spotlight as Three Arrows Capital and Terraform Labs are actually registered in Singapore. Terraform Labs is the originator of Terra USD. Now, the founder of Terraform Labs, Do Kwon from South Korea, has also been rumored to be hanging around in Singapore, despite having an Interpol arrest warrant hanging over his head. So what do these developments bode for the prospects of crypto markets moving forward?
For a better understanding of what's happening in the crypto space, we speak to Varun Mittal, Chief Growth Officer at Singlife with Aviva. Good morning, Varun. Thanks for joining us. So what do the failures of Voyager, Celsius Network, as well as Three Arrows Capital Hedge Fund tell us about the inherent risks of trading in cryptocurrencies?
See, crypto in its current state is not fully mature for retail investors and retail speculators. And a lot of challenges were people expecting that there is free money and sometimes, greed overrunning the real fundamentals. But if you see overall from a Singapore landscape perspective, it's supportive of innovation and enterprise use cases, while telling the retail investors who do not fully understand the complexity to not indulge in speculation. So speculation is what creates problem. On its own, no technology is good or bad. It's technology is what you make of it. But it's the speculation and greed which created challenges in some pockets.
But Varun, do you think then Singapore's ambitions to become a digital asset-friendly hub has been negatively impacted by this speculation and greed then?
Not entirely, because if you see the digital assets, the largest concentration would be with the enterprises and institutional investors. The retail investors would be very small, and Singapore's focus has been to protect the retail investors. The institutional investors have the skills to understand what they're buying and not buying, and they are accountable for their own things. As long as the retail investors are not getting sucked into this, the institutional guys are educated enough to take care of themselves.
Okay, fair enough. But if we look at the nature of cryptocurrency trading, it seems to be still very retail-based. So how can we actually then protect them? Is there no way? Is it the Wild Wild West?
The premise is this, right? Cryptocurrency trading and use cases are very different. So if people are using cryptocurrency for, let's say, solving emerging market cross-border payments, or people are using it to enable artists to collect payments and create their own franchises, those use cases are very different from people who want to just trade for speculation. So the challenge is, do we want to encourage as a society trading for speculation sake or trading for actual business use cases of transactions? Is the speculation part which is the one which creates more problems? And the regulators all over the world are trying to curb the speculation part. If there are genuine use cases, regulators mostly are supportive of those.
So if we take a look at Singapore then, do you think that there's a gap in Singapore's regulatory framework that needs to be addressed in the wake of all these speculative scandals? What can we expect from the Singapore Monetary Authority moving forward?
See, monetary authorities can do only to a certain extent. They have clearly defined which are regulated players, which are non-regulated players. They have defined guidelines for what retail should not buy. But if somebody says, okay, I don't care about any of that, and I'll find a way to go and buy it from somewhere all over the world, and Singapore is an open economy from that perspective, you really can't stop somebody. Somebody goes and opens a European or a Korean website and says, okay, I'm still going to do it irrespective. Even some of the banks, they made customers say that customer need to call in, say, I know the risks what I'm doing of charging my debit card on a crypto exchange. But if it's my money, there is limited you can do to stop me from spending it where I really, really want, if I'm obsessed about, I want to spend it on this exchange, for example.
And let's just focus on the institutional investor. As you say, right, they are quite sophisticated. They are very much, you know, doubling down on crypto investments. You see NASDAQ, BlackRock, Fidelity all getting into the space. You talked just now about the use cases. Help me understand the use cases here, despite all these negative press.
The premise is there are, for digital assets, for example, your fractionalization is a big use case. So, for example, let's say people are investing in startups. Right now, if you own some startup shares, you can't sell them because there's not a clear market. And, I mean, how, where will you carry the physical share certificate? So that's an example where you can tokenize an asset and allow people to have fractional ownership and make it easier for access. So, which is why some of the names you mentioned, going into that model is very helpful for them. If you see REITs today, the amount of cost which is baked in with, because the setup is very traditional, if you can digitize all of that, you can create significant efficiencies in that, in debt markets. Today, for example, how tough it is for people to access corporate bonds if you don't have $200,000. You can tokenize that and allow people to retail or, I would say, affluent to access it. So the ability to create democratization of assets because you can tokenize and have a immutable record in public eye, that's something which unlocks a massive opportunity. That's on the asset side. Of course, there are other use cases around the payment side, proof of credential side. So proving that, okay, you actually own something or following rights are owned by you. That's something which unlocks a whole economy around creators and digital rights. Mm. So first generation was Napster, second generation was Spotify. So you have a second generation of proof of ownership of media rights, digital rights, as a second generation use case coming along now.
What's the outlook for cryptocurrencies? If we rewind a year ago, 1.5 years ago, it was seen as a hedge against inflation, an alternative to gold. But honestly, the volatility takes my breath away. And so in this current high inflation environment, compounded by high interest rate, what is the outlook for cryptocurrencies? How should we view this asset class?
So again, the people who really understand crypto honestly would not have believed in that this hedge against inflation technically. But I would say retail investors should be cautious of where they are putting their money in. If you don't understand something, don't buy. Old school rule. If you don't understand something, don't buy. Not doing something is better than doing something which you don't understand. For institutional investors, they will figure it out. But for retail, it's important to ensure that you have enough savings. You invest the money to defend against inflation so that your purchasing power parity is not gone, and pick up assets which are where you know that they have a lot more predictability and stability in these times. And if you really want to, you can carve out a certain percentage of your assets, let's say 2%, 4%, 5%. Okay, this is a speculation asset, and I would try to take some higher risky bets on this and hope that it doesn't, like, but even if it goes to zero, it's, life is hurt, but it doesn't become too tough per se. So like limiting the speculation factor as an asset allocation would be something I would recommend average person on the street.
Varun, thanks very much for speaking with us. That was Varun Mittal, Chief Growth Officer at SingLife with Aviva, giving us his take on some of the trends that he sees impacting crypto markets, really giving the caution out there. If you don't understand it, don't invest in it.
And it's okay to do absolutely nothing. It's fine.
And I think you made a very interesting point, the distinction between institutional and retail, that institutions actually do find some utility with it. You know, we always had this conversation about its use for it, right? And I think he kind of painted it very nicely about the role for it for institutions. But as you say, for retail, right, does it become pure speculation and gambling then?
Right. And that's what the regulators are trying to balance out, right? They're trying to prevent that. They're trying to protect consumers from that. And really, the answer to that is maybe don't invest in cryptos if you're not aware of what the dangers are. We did see the SEC wrap Kim Kardashian on the knuckles for her involvement in advertising cryptos. So yeah, there you go. Don't follow what celebrities do just for the sake of it. 7:48 in the morning. Up next, what retail players are hoping to see in Budget 2023. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.